בליל זה יראו בוי חמש מאירויס. In the kinnis that we just said after Eichel, we mentioned that on this night, at this beginning of the day of Tisha B'Av, Chomesh Mo'irois, five tragedies took place. And the first of them, Gozar al Ovois b'froi epois. The first one of them was what happened when the spies, the Meraglim, came back with their slanderous report about Eretz Yisrael and our ancestors did not want to go to Eretz Yisrael. They accepted that slander and they cried. They wept because they felt that they were being given the wrong place to go. And Hashem said to them, on this night you cried b'chiyah shel chinam, an unwarranted cry. After all, Hashem wanted to give us this wonderful land. Hashem says, I will fix this day as a time when you'll have a real reason to cry. This will be the day when the first and second base of Mikdash will be destroyed. This will be the day when other tragedies took place, these five things that are mentioned here. And the first of them was the fact that Hashem decreed that because Jews showed such little faith in Hashem, in the land that He promised them, that the entire generation, all those 20 years and up, would not have the benefit of coming into Eretz Yisrael, would die in the wilderness, in the Midbar. That was the first of the five tragedies that's mentioned here. V'dovku boi tzoros rabois v'rois. Many other tragedies followed. Let's focus for a moment chronologically on the first and the last of those five. The first was this gzeira, this decree that Hashem made that our ancestors could not enter Eretz Yisrael. The last of them was that after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, after the destruction of the Second Temple, there was a long time when the Jewish community in Beitar held out. And then finally, Beitar was destroyed. Again, on which day? On Tisha B'Av. Let's see if there's a connection between that first one and the last one. What happened when our ancestors heard from the Meraglim that the Eretz Canaan, the land that they surveyed, was unconquerable? And they began to cry. And they went, as we learned just in last week's parsha, v'terognu ba'olechem. They went into their tents, and they mumbled and complained, and they said, "Besinas Hashem oisanu," because God hates us. Hoitzianu mimitzrayim, He took us out of Mitzrayim. Imagine such an accusation. Because Hashem hates us, that's why He took us out of Mitzrayim. Out of bondage, out of all of that corruption, and ready to bring us to Eretz Yisrael, and our ancestors are ready to say, "Besinas Hashem oisanu," that Hashem hates us. And Chazal explained what was their argument. A moshel, a parable. A king has two sons. One he has a love for, and the other one he despises. And he has two fields to give away to them. One has all the water it needs. It's right near a river. It has all the resources for irrigation. The other one has no source. dependent entirely on rain coming from heaven. Which of these two fields does he give to his beloved son, and which to the other? So they argued, of course, he would give the field that has all the irrigation resources, that's the one he would give to his beloved son. And to the other one who has to depend on rain, that he gives to the very unfavorite one. In the same way, they said, fine, Hashem took us out of slavery, out of bondage, but we could have stayed in Mitzrayim. Hashem had already subdued the Egyptians with the 10 plagues, climaxed with the plague of the firstborn. The Egyptians were subdued. We could have remained in Egypt in safety and security. We may even have ruled that country. Why did he take us out of Egypt, which has the Nile, which has all of the water that it needs? And he wants to take us to Eretz Yisrael, where we're going to be dependent on rain? So this is a sign, they said, that Hashem hates us. Why didn't he leave us in freedom, but in Egypt, where we would have had all the water we need? And what was the answer that Hashem gave to them? That there's a rule in human relations that the feelings that you have towards the other party are what you accuse that party of having feelings towards you. What's the application here? Hashem says, it's because you hate Hashem. That's why you say that Hashem hates you. Hashem loves you. He wants to give you the best land in the world. And you say that Hashem hates you? Because the truth is that you hate Hashem. What does it mean they hate Hashem? Our ancestors are guilty of a hate for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who did so much for them, who did all the miracles in Mitzrayim and freed them from bondage. The hatred that Hashem is speaking of was the hatred of dependence on Hashem. They did not want to be dependent on rain. They wanted to be self-sufficient, to have all the water they need, and not to every time when there's a shortage of rain, there's a drought, to have to come and pray to Hashem. When things get serious, to make fast days, all of those things to supplicate for rain. B'sinas Hashem, it's not Hashem's hatred for you, but your hatred for Hashem, your hatred for being dependent on Him. And what is really the relationship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to us? One of the greatest love. And here again, Chazal give us a moshul. King who has several sons, and he gives them support, he gives them generous allowance, enough for the entire year, but he doesn't see them more than once a year, because that's all they need. But he wants to see his children. So he calls them together and he says, from now on, you're going to have to come every week and collect your allowance. So then I'll know that I have a relationship with you, and I'll have you near me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us Eretz Yisrael, Dafke, that we should be dependent on rain. We should depend on, and we should call out to Him. We should be mispalel, and therefore we'll always have that closeness to Him. That's out of love for us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us this land, and not the rich, fertile delta of the Nile with all the irrigation resources, so that we should always be coming back to Him, not only every week, but every day, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the time of when we need rain, to ask Him to fulfill our prayers and to give us that rain. It's an important yisoid. It's an important rule that HaKadosh Baruch Hu established for us there, that His love is one that motivates him to give us that Eretz Yisrael. And this is where our ancestors missed out. That was the first tragedy. They lost their right, an entire generation, to come into Eretz Yisrael because they wanted to be independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be self-sufficient, and to believe that everything depends on their own powers. That was the first tragedy. We mentioned that the last tragedy was the destruction of Beitar. Many years after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Beitar held out for a long time. In Beitar, there was a legendary commander of the armies in Beitar. In our Gemara and in the Medrash, he's referred to as Bar Kuziva, more popularly known as Bar Kochba, who there was even a thought among the Chachmei Yisrael that he might be the Mashiach. But let's see where he went wrong and what brought about the destruction of Beitar. Bar Kochba was a mighty warrior, a mighty general. And he had what today we would describe as special forces. He had 200,000 soldiers under his command who had proven their tremendous courage by biting off their thumbs. That was the way that they were tested, whether they could stand every hardship and fight against the tremendous forces that were surrounding them of the Roman legions. And the Chachamim, when they heard that this was the way he was testing his soldiers, said, how long are you going to keep on maiming, making our people balei mum, causing them to lose one of their fingers? And he said, how else can I test them? I must have the bravest soldiers. I'm outnumbered by the Roman legions. I have to have some way of testing. So they told him there's another way to test. Everyone that wants to join your army, and it was a great privilege to do so, has to demonstrate that he's capable of riding on a horse and uprooting a tree from its roots as he rides along. And that way, you'll be able to have a brave army, special forces, without causing them to be maimed. So, Bar Kuziva, Bar Kochba, ended up with 200,000 from the first kind of test and 200,000 from the second one. 400,000 mighty warriors. And Bar Kochba made the great mistake of turning to Hashem and says, Lo tichsayf v'lo tisayd. Rabbeinu Shleilam, don't help us and don't hinder us. We can take care of ourselves. This was what the motto of Bar Kochba was, so confident in the power of his army, of these 400,000 extremely brave soldiers. And for 3.5 years, he was able to keep the Romans at bay. They couldn't conquer Beitar. But the secret of his success was not in his army, really. There was a Jew in Beitar by the name of Rabbi Lezer Hamoidoi, one of the Tanoim. Rabbi Lezer Hamoidoi, every day, sitting in his ashes and sackcloth, would say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every day would pray, Rabbeinu Shleilam, Al Teishev Hayoyim Badin, Al Teishev Hayoyim Badin. Don't sit in judgment on your people. And that way, Rabbi Lezer Hamoidoi made it possible for the armies of Bar Kochba to keep the Romans out of Beitar. Because every day he was mispelled to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should not judge us for our faults and therefore give us the opportunity of surviving. And this went on, as we said, for 3.5 years. And Adrianus, the Roman general, was ready to give up. He sees such stubborn resistance, he's going back to Rome. And then Goy came over to him and said to him, I'll deliver the city to you. I have a strategy for it. Because I know where their power is. He knew that it was the prayers of Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi that were saving the city from destruction by the Romans. And what did he do? This guy went, smuggled himself through the sewer pipes, smuggled himself beyond the walls of Beitar into the city, and came over to Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi. And Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi was davening, he was praying. And he said to Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi, he whispered something to him. That was it. Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi didn't hear a word that he said, even if he said anything. But he made a public exhibition of the fact that he's talking to Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi, this outsider, this foreigner. And the people saw this. And the soldiers of Bar Kokhba reported this to Bar Kokhba, to their leader, and they brought this goy to him. And Bar Kokhba asked him, what did you tell my uncle? Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi was the uncle of Bar Kokhba. What did you tell my uncle? He says, well, I don't know. I don't want to tell you, really. I don't want you to know, but if I don't tell you, you're probably going to kill me. And if I do tell you, my king will certainly kill me. So I'll take my chances and I'll tell you. I spoke to your uncle and he said he wants to deliver Beitar into the hands of the Romans. What a terrible lie. But Bar Kokhba was gullible enough to believe it. And he summoned his uncle to him, Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi, and he asked him, what did that guy say to you? He said, nothing. What did you say to him? Nothing. I was davening. I didn't hear anything he said. I said nothing to him. Bar Kokhba was furious with his suspicion that had been planted in him by this guy, and he gave his uncle a kick and killed him. And a voice came from heaven, a bus call, and said, you cut off the arm of the Jewish people and you blinded their right eye. What he meant, the bus call meant to say, was the power of the zroa, of that arm, wasn't your military might, it was the prayers of your uncle. It was the Torah of that right eye, the teaching of the Torah which made it possible to see things as they're supposed to be seen. Your punishment therefore will be that your right arm will be crippled and your eye will be blinded. And on that day, the Roman legions burst through the walls of Beitar, killed Bar Kokhba, and destroyed the city on Tisha B'Av. There a connection between the first tragedy and the last one? I believe there is. The common denominator is when a Jew feels that he can rely on his own powers, that he can rely on his own ability to irrigate his fields or to win his wars. Dangerous. When that kind of an illusion is fostered, brings destruction. It brought destruction of a generation that couldn't enter Eretz Yisrael. It brought the destruction of Beitar, where also there was this kind of conceit that we can take care of ourselves, Rabbeinu Shleilam, don't help us and don't hinder us. Behind every military victory the Jews have ever achieved, there's a Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi. There's a Beis HaMedrash. There's the people learning and davening. They're the ones that are the real secret of the victory. And when their voice is no longer heard, then follows destruction. So we have the first of the five tragedies and the last of them. But what's in between? What are the tragedies of Tisha B'Av that we most focus on, that we most commiserate with? Churban Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the first temple and the second temple, all on Tisha B'Av. Now, the purpose of fasting on Tisha B'Av, like every other one of the four fast days that we fast in regard to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, of Yerushalayim, of the exile of Jews from Eretz Yisrael, says the Rambam, the purpose is to stimulate us to do tshuva, to correct the mistakes that were made by our ancestors, because when we recall what price they paid for the mistakes they made, then we try to make sure that we will not repeat those same mistakes. And let's see what they were. First Beis HaMikdash, Mohan Yuma tells us, the Beis HaMikdash, Eretz Yisrael, was lost because of three major averes, three major sins. Idol worship, sexual immorality, murder. These were the three cardinal sins for which we lost the first Beis HaMikdash. And yet, there's a strange question that's been put forward by the Navi, Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu asks, Al meh avda ha'aretz? Why did we lose Eretz Yisrael? And he was talking about the first destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the first Babylonian exile. Al meh avda ha'aretz? Why did we lose Eretz Yisrael? And the Gemara, in a couple of places, in Masechta Nedarim, Masechta Bava Metzia, Gemara says that this question of Al meh avda ha'aretz, why did we lose Eretz Yisrael, was asked to the Chachamim, to the wise men, the sages, and they didn't have an answer. It was asked to the Nevi'im, and they didn't have an answer. Some say even it was asked to the Malachi HaShores, no answer. The only one who supplied the answer, why did we lose Eretz Yisrael, was HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is God Himself. And He said, it's because they abandoned the Torah. And the meaning of it, says the Gemara, what does it mean they abandoned the Torah? They didn't learn? No. Of course they learned Torah. Shai bochu b'Torah t'chila. They did not make a bracha on their learning of Torah. A Jew, in the morning, every morning, even on Tisha B'Av, starts off with Birchas HaTorah, giving a bracha, thanking God for giving us a mitzvah to learn Torah, for giving us a Torah to separate us, elevate us above all the nations. Before you go up to read the Torah, as we're going to be doing tomorrow, as we do every time of Kriyas HaTorah, you make a bracha. And here comes a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and he says, you know why they lost Eretz Yisrael? Because they didn't make Birchas HaTorah. That's why they lost Eretz Yisrael. We just said that they lost Eretz Yisrael because of those major averes that they did. What does that mean? That Shalei Berchu B'Torah T'chila. And why was it such a great mystery that no one else could give that answer except Hashem? Because Jews did learn Torah. And everybody who saw that, whether it was the Chachamim, the Nevi'im, Malachim, could not find any fault. Jews were learning Torah. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew they weren't learning it with the right motivation. They weren't learning it with the right approach. Ashlei Belchu b'Torah T'chila means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who looks into the hearts and minds of the people, knew that they looked at learning Torah just like any other science, any other knowledge, any other branch of wisdom. Do you make a bracha when you're studying mathematics? Or when you're studying science or philosophy? So why make a bracha? What's so special about Torah? It's another intellectual exercise. They didn't learn Torah. Lishma. They didn't learn Torah with an appreciation that this is a special gift, this is God's wisdom, and this is giving to us alone. Because they didn't learn Torah the way they were supposed to, they didn't make a bracha on it. And we go back to the original question, but is that why they lost Eretz Yisrael? Isn't it because of those three Avedas? And the answer is that as long as Jews were learning Torah the proper way, with the proper motivation, with the proper reverence for what its value is, then even though they were guilty of those very serious sins, the power of Torah protected them. So the answer is, of course, they had those sins, and that Hashem held it in balance, that as long as they're learning Torah the way they're supposed to, with all of the sins of Klal Yisrael, they were safe. But the moment that they lost that approach to Torah, to appreciate the sanctity of Torah, to appreciate that when I'm learning Torah, God is speaking to me. Special connection that we have with Hashem. Something worth making a bracha about. A Jew says, "Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvoisa v'tzivanu la'asek b'divrei Torah," that HaKadosh Baruch Hu elevated us, He sanctified us by making it possible for us to learn Torah, to hear Him speak to us. Nefesh HaChaim says that when every time when a Jew says a word of Torah, Hashem is saying it along with him. You're learning b'chavrusa with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not worth making a bracha about. So once they lost that power of Torah, then came the punishment for Avodah Zarah, Gilui Aroyos, and Shfichas Damim. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away Eretz Yisrael from them, and they went into Golus. So that was the story of the first Beis HaMikdash that became Chorv through those Averis. An important lesson to learn from that as well. Unfortunately, we live in a generation where there are so many of our misled brothers and sisters who are missing the point and what their behavior should be. And perhaps in some form or other are guilty of those or other serious Averis. And yet, our learning of Torah, with the proper approach to it, learning Torah Lishmo, learning it because Hashem gave us something special, that's what's protecting us. And it's the tefillahs and the Torah of yeshivas, of the Torah world, that's keeping the way that Rabbi Lazar HaMoidoi kept Beitar going, making it possible for our brothers in arms to be able to protect us, to be able to protect our country. So we have the churban of the first Beis HaMikdash, and if we're trying to be misakin, if the point of a fast day is to reflect on what happened then and try to change things, try to do tshuva, that's what we have to undertake. We have to undertake that we have that kind of approach to Torah, that we see the value of Torah, how important it is for our people, how important it is for every one of us, and to approach it with that kind of an understanding that this is something which sets us apart from all other nations. This is something which brings us so closer to Hashem. The more that we strengthen ourselves in the quantity and the quality of our learning Torah, that's the tikkun. That's how we are making the proper tshuva on what brought about the churban of the first Beis HaMikdash. What about the second Beis HaMikdash? Second Beis HaMikdash, says Gemara, our ancestors already learned the lesson of what happened in the first churban, the first destruction. And we know that in the second Beis HaMikdash period, they already were learning Torah, and they were doing mitzvahs. They weren't guilty of those averes that the previous generations were guilty of. So why was the second Beis HaMikdash destroyed? And the answer was because of sinas chinam, because of an unwarranted hatred of one person towards another. That kind of sinas chinam is what brought about the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, and the Gemara gives us the classic example of it, of a fellow in Yerushalayim who threw a big party. In those days, didn't send invitations by mail. They sent a shaliach, they sent a messenger to invite the people they wanted as guests. And this fellow, this host, who's inviting all the important people in Yerushalayim, tells his messenger, please invite Kamsa. I got a friend by the name of Kamsa. The messenger got it mixed up, and instead of calling Kamsa to come to the party, he called a fellow called Bar Kamsa. And Bar Kamsa was hated by this host. This host would never invite Bar Kamsa. But Bar Kamsa figures, maybe the guy wants to make peace with me, maybe he wants to make up, so I'll come to the party. After all, I got an invitation. He didn't know it was a mistake. So he comes to the party, and the host sees this fellow, and he says to him, you, my enemy, what are you doing in my party? He says, well, I was invited. It was a mistake. Get out of here. He says, no, please. Look at all the important people that are sitting here, and look at this crowd. You're going to embarrass me in public. Let me stay. I'll pay for my meal. No, get out. I'll pay for half of the whole party. No, I'll pay for the whole party. Get out of here. Took him by the hand and took him out. And this fellow, Bar Kamsa, then says, there were very important people sitting there, and no one protested against the embarrassment that I suffered. So they were pleased with it. I'm going to get even with all of my people. And he went and cooked up a whole blood libel by the Romans, that Jews are rebelling against them. Won't go into the whole story. He managed to convince the Roman ruler that Jews are in rebellion against him because they don't want to offer his sacrifice, the animal that he sent. And that eventually led to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash by the Romans. Why does Gemara bring that story? Gemara says, I'll come to because of those people, because of that story, Yerushalayim was destroyed. Because what kind of a hatred can there be like that of one Jew for another, to publicly embarrass him, throw him out of the party in front of everybody there? So this was the terrible spiritual sickness which had taken hold of the people in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. Sinas chinam, an unwarranted hatred. And if we may suggest that perhaps the root of that was also in the very first tragedy. How could they say, B'sinas Hashem oisanu, that Hashem hates us, when in truth, we were guilty of hating Hashem because we wanted to be independent? That's a warranted hatred? There's sense to that? There's any justice, any rationale in that? No. An unwarranted hatred of Hashem leads in later generations to destruction that very same day because of the unwarranted hatred of one Jew towards another. Now how can we correct that? What is the tikkun? What is the tshuva for sinas chinam? And of course, it's popularly used, the term, and very correctly so, that the way to correct the sinas chinam that brought about the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash is to practice ahavas chinam, an unwarranted love for the other Jew. Now, how do we do that? What is meant by ahavas chinam? How can you have such a concept of an unwarranted, an undeserved, even if you wish to say, love for the other person? And that's going to be the tikkun, that's going to be the correcting of the sinas chinam, which destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. I want to share with you an insight into what I mean by ahavas chinam. The Torah tells us about the love that one Jew is supposed to have for another. V'haftul reyacho kamoicho. You shall love the other Jew like yourself. What does that mean? V'haftul reyacho kamoicho means literally, if I have $1 million, I have to give away $500,000 to the other guy? The Ramban, in his Pirush and Chumash, raises the point. He says it can't be taken literally. It can't mean that I have to actually love the other person as much as myself and be ready to share everything I have with him. Number one, he says, because the Torah never demands something which is beyond human nature. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who created us, knows what our limitations are. And he knows that a person has a self-love which is impossible for him to have exactly the same love for anyone else. So the Torah wouldn't require something like that. Secondly, says the Ramban, it's against the spirit of the halacha. Famous case in the Gemara, theoretical case, two people are walking in the desert. The long way to go to civilization. One of them has a canteen of water, the other doesn't. If he shares the water, they'll both live a little bit longer, but not a chance of reaching civilization, they both will eventually die. If he keeps the water for himself, he'll make it to civilization. He'll survive. The other fellow will die sooner. What do we do? One of the sages, Ben Patira, says he must share the water so that he's not guilty of seeing the other person die sooner than himself. But along came Rabbi Akiva. And the halach is like Rabbi Akiva. The Torah says, v'chayachicho imoch, that your brother, your fellow Jew, shall live with you. With you means chayecho koidim l'chayechevecho. Your life comes first. It's not selfishness, but it's a rule in the value of how much a person's life is. That if it's a question of giving up your life, chayecho koidim, your life comes first. So where about v'ahavta re'acha kamocha? So what does it mean to love the other person like yourself? And listen to the brilliant resolution of the Ramban here. You know what it means? When the Torah asks us, v'ahavta re'acha kamocha? You know, we're used to an idea in life of a terrible characteristic called kino, jealousy, envious of someone else. What kind of jealousy? We think of jealousy, I want to have what the other fella has. And sometimes I go to all crazy lengths to get it because I have to have what he has. And for that, the Torah comes along in the Ten Commandments, in the Aseres HaDibros, and tells us, Lo yisachmoid, lo yisisave, you shall not covet, shall not desire what is the other fellow's. Whatever you need, what's good for you, Hashem has given you, don't be jealous of the other person. That's how we're used to the idea of kina. The Ramban opens our eyes to a deep psychological insight. There's another kind of envy, not that I want to have what you have. I don't want you to have what I have. Because I want to feel superior. One-upmanship. If you have everything that I have, so who am I? What's special about me? And the Ramban goes on to describe the application of that. You can have a person who'll say, okay, I'm content the other person should be healthy, he should be wise, but I don't want him to have any money. I want to be the one that's rich. And if he's already a noble spirit, he'll say, well, you know, I don't mind him being healthy, wealthy, and wise, but not quite as much as me. Because I want to feel my oats, I want to feel superior. Says the Ramban, the Torah comes along and tells us this is petty kino. It's at your expense that the other fellow has it. Nothing is being taken from you. Why shouldn't you be as happy with the success and the prosperity of another Jew as if it was your own? This is what the Torah means, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Not giving away anything of yours. That's not required in all circumstances. Of course, we have to do chesed, we have to do charity, kindness, but not the ultimate of giving away everything, half of what I have. But the meaning of the Torah is, be someone who is capable of not begrudging the other person all of his success, all of his happiness, and all his prosperity. I always like to point out There's a very interesting word in the Yiddish language which is very unique. I don't think it's in any other language. You find it in that form. In Yiddish, we call it farginen. Farginen means what we call in English to not begrudge somebody else, to be happy with somebody else's success. It's a unique term in the Yiddish language because it's a unique characteristic of Jews. This is the meaning of ahavas chinam. This is something we're capable of, without having to give anything away. Just being able to see when another fellow does well in a particular area, in a particular field, the other fellow gets a good job, the fellow gets a good shidduch, whatever it is, that I should be so happy about it as if it were happening to me. That's ahavas chinam that can counteract, that can correct the sinas chinam which destroyed the second base of Mikdash. And when we think about these tragedies that took place on this day, and we already spoke about four of them. We spoke about that accusation that God hates us, that brought about that death sentence on a generation in the wilderness that couldn't come to Eretz Yisrael. We mentioned Beitar, the falling of Beitar, with that same mistake of thinking that they can be independent of Hashem's help. Don't help us, don't hinder us. And who needs Rabbi Elazar HaMoidoi? Everything depends on the military might. First base of Mikdash, second base of Mikdash. There was yet the fifth tragedy. On the very day that Beitar was destroyed, there also the Romans came and they plowed under Yerushalayim. Now, they weren't content with just destroying the base of Mikdash and all the important buildings in the city, but they literally plowed under the city. They renamed it Aelia Capitolina, some Greek name for it, that still appears in some of the literature about Yerushalayim, and some of the old maps that you can see with that Roman name given to it. Why? Why did they do that? Because they wanted to wipe out any trace of Yerushalayim. Not just destroying a base of Mikdash. Not just taking the people of the land into exile. But to actually demolishing that city, leveling it, turning it into a field. And if we try to analyze, why is it that that happened to us? We know that every punishment, every tragedy that Hashem wreaks upon us is done in the sense of mido keneged mido, measure for measure, poetic justice. And the purpose of poetic justice is that if we can learn from the punishment, we learn the nature of the crime, then we know how to correct it. What is there a connection between the plowing under of Yerushalayim and what we were guilty of in that period? And perhaps the answer lies in the first, very first words that we said tonight, that we heard read tonight. Eicha yoshva bodot hu ira basiyam. The Navi asks, how can it be? Crying out, how can it be? Yoshva bodad, that she sits alone, she dwells alone. This city, Abosiam, which had so many people in it. We have Midrashim, which tell us the tremendous numbers of Jews who lived in Yerushalayim. And here it became desolate and plowed under. Eicha yoshva bodad. And it's been suggested that what the Navi is saying, Jews were meant to be bodod. Jews were meant to be separate from all other nations. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us and gave us a Torah that gave no other nation. He gave us a land of our own. He gave us everything, all of the kelim, everything we needed to be His special people, and did not want us to mingle with the other nations, to assimilate, and to become part of the world He wanted us to be bodod. He wanted us to be alone, but by choice. He wanted us to be alone and respected by all the nations of the world. And there was such a time when Jews were doing the right thing. The whole world looked up to them. They were separate and elevated. They were bodod because they did not mingle with the rest. They did not lower their standards. They were bodod. But what happens when they try to be like all the other nations? When they try to assimilate into the world community, and kechol ha-goyim beis Yisrael, the Jews should dress like the goyim, should talk like the goyim, and do everything like the goyim, then eicho yashva bodod. What that brings upon us is a different kind of isolation. An isolation not of one of born of respect for us, but an isolation of a whole world looking down upon us, calling us aggressors, calling us dishonest, all kinds of accusations against us. That's also an isolation. But it all goes back to Eicho Yashva Bodod. That's what the Navi asks. Didn't we realize, didn't we appreciate the separateness that we had, that elevation we had above all nations? We lost that. We wanted to try to imitate the other nations. What happens when you try to imitate the other nations? Hashem says, you're going to remain isolated. You're never going to disappear into the world community. And if you don't do it by choice, then it's going to happen through the hatred, through a world community ganging up on you and telling you, giving you all kinds of dictates, you got to do this, you got to do that, and then destroying your holy places. That's Eicho Yashva Bodod. That's the, perhaps, what the lesson was of Yerushalayim being plowed under. Once Yerushalayim became guilty of imitating all the other cities of the world and not keeping its sanctity anymore, Eicho Hoysa Harazir Me'anovi, say it, Eicho Hoya Lezoina, Kiryon Emona, this faithful city, how did it become like a prostitute? How did it become like all the other nations, all corrupt like all the other cities of the world? When that happens, so Yerushalayim loses its identity, and the goy comes along and plows it under. You're no longer Yerushalayim, you're Aelia Capitolina, you're some other city of the world with a Greek name. Five tragedies. Five things to remind us that we have to make the correction of the mistakes that were made in the past so that we should not suffer the consequences that our ancestors suffered. But on ending on a note of a certain perspective, a certain sense of nechama, after all, we end even our eicho also with a touch of Nechama, Shivenu Hashem Eilechu V'Nashuva Chadei Shemenu Kikedem. We say, we call out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end of this tear-filled Eicha. We conclude, Hashem, bring us back to you and renew the days of old. You know, Chazal tell us about 9 days which are now coming to their bitter conclusion. In these 9 days which began with Rosh Chodesh Av, Chazal tell us that Kishem, Shemishanichnas Av, Mimayitin Besimcha, just as when the month of Av begins, we decrease our sense of joy, we don't eat meat, we don't drink wine, and all of the other manifestations of Avelus in this period that we've gone through up until this day. Mishanichnas, just in the same way, that when Chodesh Av comes, we cut down on our simcha, Mishanichnis Adar, when the month of Adar begins, Marbim B'Simcha, we increase our simcha. And Rashi says there on the spot in Masechta Tainis, what does it mean, the beginning of Adar? Why do we increase our simcha? Because Purim V'Pesach, There were the great miracles that took place, the liberation from Egypt, the miracle of Purim. It all begins that season of miracles with Chodesh Adar. But how do we understand this connection that our sages have made between the very peak of Simcha, Purim, and Pesach, with the very peak, the very apex of what? Of Avelis. How can that be? How do you put the two together? And perhaps we can understand that with a marshal of something from real life, which many of us certainly have encountered. Father takes a child for a walk. He's walking along with him, and he comes near to the bank, and he says to the youngster, "Wait out here, I have to take care of something in the bank. I'll be right out." The boy waits there. He's looking through the door. His father didn't come out yet. It doesn't take just a minute to get things done in the bank. And he delayed. And the youngster looks again. His father hasn't come out. He begins to cry. And again, time goes by and he begins to shout. And he enters into a hysterical state. People can't comfort him. Psychologists say that there's no trauma in human life comparable to that sense of abandonment that a child has, that his parents have forgotten him and have left him. So here's the kid, is crying his head off. And then finally the father comes out of the bank and the kid runs to him, hugs him and kisses him. And you've never seen a greater simcha in your life than that kind of a reunion between parent and child. This is what Chazal are telling us. Av, Chodesh Av, this 9 days that we went through, this Tisha B'Av that we're going through, this is a time when we're like that child asking, "Where's our father? How could it be that the Babylonians in their time could come and destroy the Beis HaMikdash? Where is our father? How could it be that the Romans came in the second Beis HaMikdash and destroyed it? Where's our father?" That's the sense we have. It's hysteria. That's our weeping. That's our avelis today. But we're told, remember, there's also a Chodesh Adar. There's a Chodesh Adar that introduces a time when the father comes out of the bank, when the Kadosh Baruch Hu revealed himself in all his glory, took us out of Egypt, saved us from the genocidal plot of Haman. HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself to us. So whenever we think about Chodesh Adar, we think about Purim and Pesach, it reminds us that our Father did not abandon us even now. He's hiding his face. There's Hesed upon him. There were times when it was needed for Jews to learn their lesson, to correct their mistakes. If the harshest measure had to be taken, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hid himself from us and allowed the Goyim to come in and destroy the Beis HaMikdash, take us into exile, do all the terrible things that happened on Tisha B'Av. But that doesn't mean that we were abandoned. Purim and Pesach, they remind us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there all the time, just like the father was there all the time caring about that child. This is the perspective we have to have. Even as we weep, and even as we mourn the Churban Beis HaMikdash and all of the tragedies that took place on Tisha B'Av, never to despair. The Rabbeinu Shleilim is with us. The Rabbeinu Shleilim, even in our present day, when we have our own problems here in Eretz Yisrael, and Jews throughout the world are having their own problems, economic problems and political problems, there's all kinds of things, of tzoras the Jews have. But every one of them is the Rabbeinu Shleim's way of reminding us that we got to come back to him. And Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecho, there's a steady dialogue that goes on between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. We say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we ask him, "You start the process, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You bring us back, Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecho." And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "No, I want you to start. Shuva Eli, come back to me. Vashuva Elecho, and I'll come back to you. I haven't left you. Shuva Eli, start correcting those mistakes. Come back, and I'll come back to you." and we say to our Kaddish Baruch Hu, we'll try, we'll do our best. And then we can really say with a full heart, Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecho v'nashuva chadesh yomeinu kikedem.